Dragnet.
The Jack Benny Program.
I'm that man. Matt Dillon, United States Marshal.
George Burns and Gracie Allen.
Good evening, friends of the Inner Sanctum.
We offer you Escape.
Our Miss Brooks.
Suspense.
Richard Diamond, Private Detective.
Fibber McGee and Molly.
The Great Gildersleeve.
Yeah. Radio Theater.
In the air.
Dedicated to man's imagination, the theater of the mind.
You know what our call letters WGN stand for, don't you?
WGN Radio Theater.
The special three-hour presentation.
With Carl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right, about 8 minutes after 11 p.m. here on the WGN Radio Theater. Program 284 in the series. It's May 19th, and to my right is the vivacious and effervescent and very dimply Lisa Wolf. What's up, Lisa?
What's up, Carl? How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. Glad to be here.
We have Shantae Garth in the booth as our producer, and we are going to play some classic radio shows all the way to 2 a.m. You know what we have on store?
I do, and I have to mention how many people have communicated on Facebook that they are so excited for a Fibber McGee and Molly episode
tonight. Oh, really? I thought you were going to say Frank Sinatra in Rocky Fortune.
Well, that's exciting, too. I don't know. We have a good lineup tonight, so we can't complain about anything.
We're going to start things off with Suspense, a good sci-fi adventure with Frankenstein, the Mary Shelley story from 1955. Then it is Fibber McGee and Molly from 1945, and then Rocky Fortune, which was Frank Sinatra's detective series. That is from 1954 as well. And it's all brought to you by Cat's Pride. We're going to play our Cat's Pride game. Crack the quote. What's the movie, Lisa?
Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, 1989.
Wow. Yeah, I remember that movie.
Do you?
Sure.
Oh, wow.
I remember all the Indiana Jones
films. Do you?
Oh, yeah.
Well, then
those were good.
You should be good.
Yeah. All right. So what do they win?
They're going to win a desktop indoor weather station brought to you by American Weathermakers.
All right. The number to call, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Call right now. Play the game with us. Be the eighth caller. We'll be right back.
It's time now for Crack the Quote, brought to you by Cat's Pride.
We have Stephanie to play with us tonight. Hey, Steph.
Hi, Lisa. Hi, Carl.
Hi, Steph.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. Glad you made it through. Caller number eight. We're going to play a Crack the Quote. The movie is Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. You ready to go?
I sure am.
All righty. Number one. And Carl may be a big help. He actually remembers the movie. So that could be helpful.
If I remember anything, that's already a plus.
I agree. Okay. I can't argue with him, right?
Took my Prevagen.
Yeah. Okay. Number one. Where are these missing pages? This map, we must have these pages back. Number two. What do we seek through millions of pages? Number three. That's where I'm walking, through pages, these pages.
I'm going to go with two.
All right. What do we seek through millions of pages? Carl?
Is it one?
I think it's one.
You like one? Where are these missing pages?
I'm going to trust Carl.
I'm
going to
go with one. All
right. Number one, where are these missing pages? This map, we must have these pages back. Let's hear it.
Where are these missing pages? This map, we must have these pages back.
Yeah, there you go. See, nothing to it.
Way to go, Steph.
Carl, you were helpful tonight.
You were great.
Listen.
Awesome.
Once in your life, you need to be helpful. At least,
I know.
Right?
He did it for you. Stephanie, you are the winner. You've won a desktop indoor weather station. It's brought to you by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling. They are the 60-Minute Man. You can call them at 855-955-HVAC. Congratulations. This desktop weather station is great. We've had so many people that have texted in about it, so I hope you'll love it.
Oh, I'm so excited. I really wanted one. Thank you guys so much.
I wanted one too.
You're
take
welcome.
Care.
Great to talk with you, Stephanie. Yeah. Oops, we lost her. All right.
That's
well,
okay.
she got her desktop calendar. Right?
Not yet, but she'll get it. She didn't get it yet. That would be fast. We could have a drone send it right over to her.
Yes.
And she could have it in no time.
So listen, we have a text in line, Lisa, 312-981-7200. Folks, that is the way to interact with us. throughout the 3-hour show all the way till 2 a.m. And then we're back here again tomorrow night, 3 more hours. Every Saturday and Sunday night, that's where you'll find us, right here on the greatest radio station on the planet, 720 WGN. We're in the Showcase studio. People are walking
by here.
Yeah,
we're here just for a few more weeks. So yeah, we are moving very soon.
Moving to,
you don't know the address.
I think it's 303 Wacker.
It's 303 East Wacker.
Hey.
That was good.
I'm like on point tonight.
You are. Did you have your nap or something?
I know. I told you. I took my Prevagen.
Oh, that must be
that
it.
That helps.
Okay,
helps
good.
A lot.
Sounds good.
All right, so the text in line, 312-981-7200. Do text us. We love getting your texts.
I am reading all of your texts. I love your texts.
Keeps
so
Lisa
you.
Up. Gives her something to do.
Oh, yeah.
She doesn't fall asleep.
I have nothing else to do, so
her.
Let's just focus on that.
We're going to start things off with suspense. This was really radio's greatest series of mystery and high adventure. It started on CBS back in 1942, lasted until 1962, and it was billed as radio's outstanding theater of thrills. All your favorite movie stars appeared on Suspense. Clark Gable, Jimmy Stewart, Henry Fonda, Humphrey Bogart, Mary Astor, Betty Davis, Orson Welles, Lisa Wolf. They all were on Suspense. And it aired for 20 years on radio. It's a long time,
Lisa.
It
sure is.
Wow. And then it made a transition to television in 1949. And every once in a while, they would do a sci-fi story on Suspense, and that's what we have for you now. Good horror and sci-fi story by the great Mary Shelley. She wrote this story way back in the late 1800s, Frankenstein. This stars Stacey Harris. Let's go back to June 7th, 1955, part one of Suspense.
And now, tonight's presentation of radio's outstanding theater of thrills, Suspense. Tonight, the story of Frankenstein, written by Mary Shelley, and starring Mr. Tracy Harris and Mr. Herb Butterfield.
James?
Hi, Victor. Hey, just in time to give me a hand. Oh, these Indian summers. Hot, too sticky.
James, I'd like to talk to you.
Well, of course. Anything wrong?
Yes.
Oh. Well, then, let's go in the house. I'll get you a beer. We can talk.
Oh, not in the house. Do you mind if we just walk?
Oh, of course not. Hmm. Might get some rain. When's Elizabeth coming home?
Tomorrow or Tuesday, I think. James,
Oh, look now, we're friends. You know you can speak to me. What's the matter? One of your patients die? You made a mistake, perhaps?
No. Nothing like that. Perhaps it's worse. I'm not sure.
Has it anything to do with Elizabeth going away?
In a way, yes.
Oh. My favorite place. You know, Victor, I think up most of my sermons here.
Listen, I've been doing an experiment. It's very complicated. I'm almost finished.
That's wonderful.
I think I'm a little afraid of it. I don't know. I've tried to think it out myself. I can't find the answer.
Oh, go on.
You've got to promise that you'll never breathe a word of what I'm about to tell you.
You have my word.
You swear?
Oh, I don't usually break my word.
I'm sorry. Look, I've made something. It's tremendous. It's impossible. But I think I've done it. And it goes against everything you believe, James.
What? Well, what have you done?
I put it together. Heart, brain, nerves, muscle, everything. I've done it. Do you understand? A complete body.
And you're upset because of that? You think you've done something wrong?
Last night I made it move. I'm not certain, but I think I can give it life. Don't you see why I'm afraid, James? I've created a man. You don't have to see this thing if you don't want to, James.
Where is it?
In my lab. I'm the only one who has a key. Nobody else ever goes in there.
I don't say I believe what you've told me, but how do you know you can make it live? I mean, is it anything more than galvanic action?
You'll see. Go ahead.
Why lock it?
I always do.
No windows.
It's better that way. Now, before I show you, I want to explain. Here, this is what started it. It was mostly an accident. One of the kids brought me his dog, been run over, killed. He wouldn't believe it was dead, and he expected me to bring it back. So I gave it a shot in the heart, then another with this stuff, a compound I fooled with for a long time.
Yeah?
Well, the dog came back to life, just for a moment.
How do you know the dog was dead?
It was. It had been for 2 hours. Now, all this happened 3 years ago.
You've been experimenting on things ever since?
Yes, it's
right. Wrong.
I don't know.
It's wrong. What are you going to do? Try to bring it to life?
I've got to try.
If you've known that all the time, why did you come to me? Why are you unsure about it?
I wanted to tell you. I had to tell someone. You're my friend.
I'm a minister. I preach and believe in the Word of God.
What about science?
One doesn't believe in science. One accepts it as a power given to man by his creator.
I'm not arguing, James. I'm only saying that if this thing can live, haven't I accomplished a tremendous work for science?
I don't know.
Do you want to see it?
No. No, I don't. But I must.
Oh, it's not terrible to look at. I've done a pretty good job on it. It isn't quite finished. The face, mostly. Well?
No. No, Victor, bury it. Let it be at peace. Don't do it, even if you can. And I can't imagine it possible. Don't try.
Do you realize what it would mean?
I don't want to. Put it to rest, man. Forget it.
That's just it. I can't. Not until I find out one way or the other.
What are you going to do?
Show you what happened last night.
I don't want to see. I don't care.
I know better.
Listen to me, Victor. This mustn't go on. You've got to stop it.
Not yet. Not until I find out.
Does Elizabeth know what you're doing?
No.
Why did you send her away?
I didn't want her here when I made the last test.
Because you're ashamed? You know it's wrong. You know what she'd think.
Oh, I'm not ashamed. I think I'm a little frightened, oh. This is bigger than anything since the world began. Perhaps that's why I wanted you here.
If it moves, if you prove your point to me, will you stop then? Will you destroy it? The formulas, whatever papers you have, destroy all of it, will you?
I don't know. Hand me that hypodermic there, will you?
No. If I say I believe you, Victor,
have to be afraid of it. It couldn't hurt you, you know. There's only enough of this stuff to stimulate a very small portion of its brain.
I'm not afraid of it. I'm afraid for us all. I've never preached to you, Victor, but...
It moved its left foot last night, then the right. I'm going to try the arm now. Will you... move the light over here, will you, please? Thanks. Now, watch carefully. It only takes a few seconds. No, that's the way it was yesterday. The movement only lasts for a moment, though. That's all.
I don't know what to say. I don't even think I understand what I've seen, except that it's terrible.
Why? Because you don't understand?
I'm afraid, if you like. Afraid for you, for what you've done, that thing lying there. You've got no right. I won't allow... What's that?
What's what?
Listen.
Where's my stethoscope? possible. There wasn't enough.
It's breathing. Victor, what have you done? The thing's alive.
You are listening to Frankenstein, tonight's presentation in radio's outstanding theater of thrills, Suspense. Alert Americans will heed history's lessons. Throughout history, surprise has had a leading role in military disasters. Today, an enemy capable of surprise air attack could leave chaos in his wake. That's why you should be in the Civilian Ground Observer Corps, volunteering a few hours a week to guard our skies. Be a ground observer. Contact your local civilian defense office and join immediately.
Did you hear that, Lisa?
Yeah.
Join the ground reserves.
Okay, I'm on
my
way.
They need you.
Yeah, they don't need me.
I could just see you, like, you know, in the military gear with a rifle and everything. And
yeah, no, you're the wrong girl.
I could see you would be like... What was that, G.I. Jane, or well, there was G.I. Jane, and then there was Private Benjamin.
Right.
You would be more like Private Benjamin.
Yeah, you got the wrong girl here. I'm not that. I'm something else, I don't know what, but not that.
But you're something else, all
oh,
right.
Oh, I know.
That's the first portion of Frankenstein on Suspense. More after these words.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
So, Lisa, do you think it's possible to create human life like they're doing here? It's alive.
Well,
on Frankenstein.
I'm going to say anything's possible.
So people are texting in saying they're creeped out to this show, huh?
Yeah, that's a good thing.
It's very creepy.
And people are also saying that they can actually visualize what's going on in the brain because the sound effects are so good that we can actually picture all this, which is the point of old-time radio.
Yeah, it's the point of radio theater. And the theater of the mind, we all have one. The theater of the imagination. We all have one.
Some people are just a little more imaginative than others.
You know, the thing is, when I was 12 and I first heard my first classic radio show, I did not know I had a theater of the mind in there. I didn't know that until I heard the show. Because I'd grown up watching Batman and, you know, Wild Wild West, and it was all right there on that little TV screen. But once I heard a classic radio show, it just... opened up this.
You.
Yeah, it did.
It actually changed your life.
It really did.
Yeah.
Suspense on a Country Road was the very first show I ever heard. And that's why I give that show away to everyone listening. All they have to do is go to classicradiostore.com. And at that site, classicradiostore.com, that episode, the first one I ever heard, Suspense on a Country Road, starring Cary Grant from 1950, is available for digital download absolutely free. Got to listen to that show. It's one of the best.
Yeah, we've played it on here before.
Yeah, we have.
That's a good one.
Right now we're listening to Suspense. This episode is called Frankenstein. Let's go back and tune this in from June 7th, 1955.
And now we bring back to our Hollywood soundstage Mr. Stacy Harris and Mr. Herb Butterfield, starring in tonight's production of Frankenstein. A tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
Yeah. But it didn't have enough. It couldn't have. 10 cc's. 10 yesterday. Unless the drugs are cumulative, maybe that's it. Has it moved again?
No. And his eyes are open. What are you going to do?
Now? Listen to its heart again.
It's got to be destroyed. We've got to put an end to it.
Will you be quiet?
It's inhuman. Don't you see what you're doing? You can't give it a soul. You can't...
How do you know? How do you know what I can give it? I've given it life, haven't I? It sees, breathes, moves. Perhaps it hears. Yes, I wonder, does it hear? Hey! Look, did you see that? It blinked, the head jerked. James, it hears. It's aware of sound. Does it feel pain?
Don't. Don't. It's not an animal. You deformed it like a man. Give it the dignity of one. I won't let you do that
I've
to it.
I've gone this far.
Put down the scalpel.
What are you going to prove by that?
I think you must be mad.
I didn't interfere with your work.
There's something at the door.
Yes, I know. Better strap it down on the table. James, you won't forget your promise, will you?
I'm sorry I gave you my word. I'm sorry you ever told me about this. I feel I'm as guilty as you are now.
Took you so long. Hello, James.
Hello, Elizabeth.
I tried to call you from the station, dear, but the line's out of order.
Oh, I'm sorry. Did you have a nice time?
Lovely. Everybody sends their love.
That's good.
What a fine pair of sober sides you are. What did you do, darling? Break one of my good dishes? I knew I shouldn't have left you alone. Well, what are we all standing in the hall for? Come on, let's go.
Elizabeth, I must be going.
Well, it's raining very hard.
I'll be all right.
Well, then you'll have to take an umbrella. There's one in the kitchen.
Are you going to tell her?
No.
You won't unstrap it from the table, will you?
Not yet.
I'll try to come back later. I want to think.
About what?
You've changed since you came to see me this afternoon. You don't really care what I think now, do you?
I suppose not. Thanks anyway, James.
Are you going to let it live?
Well, that's funny coming from you. Have I the right to kill it?
I'll tell you this, Victor. You're doing something you have no right to do. Something that you don't even understand. The creation of man isn't your job. It isn't mine. I know your bright, scientific mind's laughing at me.
Here's the umbrella, James. But I wish you'd wait until the storm blows
I
over.
Really must get back. Thank you, Elizabeth. I'll return it tomorrow. Goodbye.
Well, what's the matter with him? Have you been arguing religion again, Victor?
Oh, no. No, dear. No. I'm doing a little work in the lab. It's rather important. Do you mind?
What is going on, dear? There's something.
No, dear. Nothing at all. There isn't.
I know there is. What's the matter?
I've told you nothing. I've got to get back to work now. Straps. It got up off the table.
Sir.
It broke the straps. It's just standing there looking at me. What do I do? Talk to it? What do I say? Can it understand I've done it? I've done it. It's almost perfect. Muscular control, coordination. I wish I'd finished the face, though. But to break those straps, it must be terribly strong, and that's odd. It's not over average size. Now what? Can you understand what I say? Do you feel any pain? Are you hungry? I'm a man, like you. You are a man. Do you understand? This is a mirror. You can see yourself in it. Look. It's all right. It's all right. Angry. But it doesn't show anger in its face. There's emotion there, though. It sees ugliness and it's afraid.
You do.
I'll have to get it back on the table. Put it to sleep. That's the best way. Then use a stronger strap or a chain. His eyes. Just staring. Seem watery. Oh, what a marvel it is, though.
I want you to come over here and sit down. Do you hear me? Come here and sit down. Come here. No, don't touch that. No, no, stop it. Stop it. Put that down. No! No! No!
Victor, Victor, darling.
Elizabeth, how did you get in here?
I heard some noise and came down. The lab door was open.
I locked it.
The lock was broken. What's the matter? What's happened?
Did you see anyone?
No. Did someone break in?
Elizabeth, don't ask me any questions. Just do what I ask. Go get your coat. I'm taking you over to James' house. I want you to stay there.
Why? Why, what is it, Victor?
I can't tell you about it now. You may have to stay there all night. Now hurry, please.
We've got to call the police.
No, no, James. They'll shoot it. I don't want that. It's just frightened, that's all.
You're being a fool, Victor. Do you realize what it means, that thing roaming about the country? What about the children? Everybody in the village? I'm going to get the police.
No, no. James, please, listen. Give me a chance to find it first.
Then what? You do a few more experiments? Give it speech, perhaps, and it happens again?
It's mine.
I made it. I'm not thinking of that now. It's the village and your wife. We don't even know where it is. If it wants to kill, how do you know where it will start?
All right. All right, then just give me an hour. Please, James, let me try to find it before we call the police. If I do, I'll take it back. I'll destroy it myself.
You give me your word?
Yes, yes.
All right. I'll go with you.
Thanks, James.
I'll get my rifle. Do you have a gun?
Yes, but I'm not going to use it unless...
Yes, unless. That's why I'll take mine. I shan't be a moment. It's getting dark. Where do you think it might have gone?
That's hard to tell. If it's afraid of thunder, it might be hiding in a barn. That's where I'm heading now.
The old Hamilton place?
That's right.
Well, how are you going to capture it? Have you thought of that?
I brought along a hypodermic.
You're not afraid anymore, are you?
No.
It's strange, because I am. Not of what it might do to me, but because of the fact that I've seen it. I know it exists.
Listen. There. The dog might have seen it. Sounds as though it's coming from around the Hamilton place. If it is in there, there's no way out the back. It was boarded up, wasn't it?
Yes, but it broke out of your lab.
Then I'll go in. Wait out here, will you?
I'm coming with you.
No, no. If it tries to escape, if it does do something to me... Shoot it as it comes out.
Don't take the chance. It won't let you get near it.
I'm going to try. I lied. I am afraid. It's somewhere in here, hiding, waiting for me. I am afraid. I should have destroyed it. James was right. Oh, what's the matter with this flashlight? That's better. What? Was that it? There. There in the corner. There it is. I won't hurt you. It's all right. I understand. I won't hurt you. Don't be frightened. It's going to be all right. No! No! Shoot it. I might have hit it. I don't know. Is it gone? Yes. Are you... Victor.
He never recovered consciousness again. Outside, I looked for the thing I'd shot at, but there was no sign of it. I returned to the lab and burned every paper, destroyed every single evidence of Victor Frankenstein's terrible experiment. But the result of that experiment has never been found, nor have I been able yet to convince the authorities that such a thing ever existed.
Suspense, in which Mr. Stacy Harris and Mr. Herb Butterfield starred in tonight's presentation of Frankenstein. Next week, the story of terror in the streets. We call it The Whole Town Sleeping. That's next week on Suspense. Is produced and directed by Anthony Ellis. Frankenstein was written by Mary Shelley. The music was composed by Lucian Morowick and conducted by Wilbur Hatch. Featured in the cast were Vivi Janis and Barney Phillips.
Join the FBI in Peace and War Wednesday nights on the CBS Radio Network.
That is Suspense, June 7th, 1955, with Frankenstein, starring Stacey Harris, also in the cast, Herb Butterfield. You had Larry Thor announcing, and that was a story by Mary Shelley, as heard on CBS. Let's take a quick break. Then it's more here on the WGN Radio Theater. All right.
All right.
Sounds good, Lisa
Wolf. I should do that.
What, tune in and win some Sox tickets?
Yeah, that'd be fun.
Yeah.
Sure.
You want to go see the Sox?
Sure. Why not?
You like baseball?
You know, it's a pastime.
No, you can come and watch me play baseball. I play baseball, you know.
Mm-hmm. I could.
But you don't want to see me and my baseball friends?
Can I bring my baseball buddies? Can I have a family of four-pack?
We're pretty good, you know.
I'm sure. What are you, like the over 60 league? What is
no,
it?
No, it's not. Huh.
No, really.
I play in a 45 and then a 54.
Okay. Because do you play in two different leagues?
I play in two leagues, yeah.
Good.
So one's a 45 and over.
Okay.
And one's a 54 and over.
So do you use like a softball?
No.
I don't know.
This is baseball.
Well, I know.
That's sacrilegious.
Well, okay.
Softball? No, I'm only kidding. I love softball.
Okay.
But this is baseball.
Okay.
With umpires and everything.
Okay.
I'm still hoping that the Cubs
are going to call you.
You never know.
Second base, right?
I'm a middle infielder, yeah. Third, okay. Short, second.
Short? What?
Huh?
Huh?
What? Who's on first?
What did you say?
What's on second? I don't know who's on third.
I don't know.
Yeah, I play...
You know what? We should play that.
Baseball.
We should play a little Abbott and Costello. We should do that.
Yeah, the who's on first
we
especially.
We really should do
That's
that.
That's a great one.
It's like so classic, we don't even play it.
We play it. We play Abbott and Costello.
I know, but not that episode.
Well, yeah, the Abbott and Costello.
We should actually do that.
Yeah, we could do it.
Let's do that.
We should do it. Me and you. I'll be Bud Abbott and you be Lou Costello.
Oh, we could not do it justice. I mean, we could have some fun with it, but...
Nobody can do it justice to the real guys.
That's what I'm saying.
Bud Abbott and Lou Costello. Nobody did it better than them. But, you know, there was a really good movie that had Harvey Korman.
Okay.
And, gosh, I'm trying to think. Buddy Hackett.
Okay.
And Harvey Korman.
Oh, he's so funny.
Played the Bud Abbott role. And Buddy Hackett played the Lou Costello role.
Okay.
And I'm sure people out there listening remember this movie.
Yeah.
And they did the Who's On First on there. And it was really great.
You know
great.
What? I'll look it up
really,
on YouTube.
Really, really great.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
Out.
In our next hour, we have Fibber.
Who's
Mickey.
On first?
Yeah, that's right. Who's on first? What's on second? I don't know who's
on
third.
Tomorrow throws to today.
That's right. Yeah, see, Dave knows it. Next hour, Fibber McGee and Molly, Jim and Marion Jordan, real life married couple from originally from Peoria, Illinois. And then we have Rocky Fortune with Frank Sinatra. As Rocky Fortunato, he was sort of a, he wasn't really a detective, but he was just like a man about town, and he always got trying to be hired to do jobs and things, and of course, it always ended up where he'd get wrapped up in some kind of a murder case.
Solve the crime.
So he wasn't really a detective, he was kind of an amateur detective on there. Very good series, though. Frank Sinatra is the lead. That's in our third hour. So a lot more classic radio coming your way.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
Ah, thank you, David Jennings. It is 8 minutes after midnight here on the WGN Radio Theater. Lisa and I play all your favorite classic radio shows Saturday and Sunday nights. You name it, we have it here, including Fibber McGee and Molly, which is in this hour, and then hour three, it's Frank Sinatra starring in Rocky Fortune. What's on tomorrow night, Lisa? Do you know?
It's actually tonight.
Oh, yeah, that's
right. It is after midnight, and tonight we have I Was a Communist for the FBI.
You were?
I was.
I'm going to turn you in.
I know. Shh. The Jack Benny program.
Right.
Oh, my gosh. And the sealed book, which is always great.
Good stuff.
Of course,
good
we've
stuff.
Got great stuff.
Fibber McGee and Molly in this hour, and it's all brought to you by Cats Pride. Let's play our game, Cats Pride. Crack the quote. What's the movie?
You're going to like this one, Carl. Did this for you.
Yeah.
Scarface.
Ooh.
Right? You like that
movie.
One.
Yes.
I know you did.
Love that movie.
I know. You'll know this one.
Okay.
I have faith in you.
And what do they win?
They're going to win a Twilight Zone 4 CD set.
All right. The number to call, 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. We'll take the fifth caller. Call right now. We'll play the game live on the air after these words.
It's time now for Crack the Quote, brought to you by Cat's Pride.
Hi, Gary. Hi, Gary. We got Gary there?
Yeah.
Hi, how are you?
Oh, there he is. Sorry, Gary. How are you, buddy?
No, my name's not Gary. My name is Robin. I live in Gary, Indiana.
Oh.
Oh, sorry. That was Carl, come on. You got that wrong.
It's always my fault.
I'm sorry. Carl got a little messed up. We're going to go. What's your name, Rob?
Okay.
All right. Well, we're starting off on a good note. Anyhow, the movie Scarface. Carl's laughing. I think you're going to know this one. This is a famous quote from the movie.
All right.
So, number one, you had me at woof. Number two, fat dog, skinny dog, little itty bitty dog.
What?
Number three, every dog has his day.
Oh, man, I don't know. What do you think?
Well, you know what? I'm going to have to go with number three.
Every dog has his day. What do you think, Carl?
Yeah, I'll go with three.
You like that one?
Let's make it unanimous.
Roger, hello.
Well, hi there.
Okay, let's hear it.
Every dog has his day.
There you go. Nothing to it. Gary's so glad you got it right.
Not Gary.
I'm sorry. It says Gary.
Gary. Hey, look, it's like Robin, in Batman.
You know, it's like Batman and Robin. I'm Batman, he's Robin. And
I'm sorry.
You're Batgirl.
I'm sorry. It said Gary, but it says Robin. We are clear. Robin is one.
Yeah, so she goofs up and she blames it on
me.
No,
because I looked at the screen and it said Gary, but it says Robin. We are all clear. No problem.
Send Robin a nice Twilight Zone CD, would
you? We're going to send you an extra good Twilight Zone. It's a 4-CD set, and it's hosted by Stacey Keach, and they are amazing to listen to. So I hope that you enjoy them extra, extra, extra. We will never, ever call you Gary again, I promise.
I hope so, and... can you send a coupon for a pizza along with that?
No, we can't.
I'm sorry. You know, WGN sends out the prizes, but we'll enjoy the Twilight Zones. Have a lot of fun with it.
Have fun with it, Robin. Right. Thanks, buddy.
Take care.
Thank you very much. You folks have a beautiful
All right, you
evening.
Too. Thanks. You too. You
yeah,
too.
Exactly.
Lisa blaming it on me.
Well,
that sounds like something you do. Throw me right under the bus, and it wasn't even my fault.
I didn't answer
What's the
phone?
Weather like down there?
What was the name of the bus? Gary
I'm just looking
or
at my
Robin?
Screen. I can't even remember anymore.
All right. Well, you ready for... Hi there.
What's hey, Roger.
Hello
you
there.
You just like popped in there.
All right.
See well, you coming.
You know, you were playing the game.
Time for Fibber
right.
McGee
I
and
love
Molly.
Fibber.
I told you, everybody loves Fibber
I know.
McGee. So excited
it's
to play.
Going
to
be good. On this one, McGee meets an architect next door. Tells him how to... build that house. He tells him exactly what to do. Let's go back now to November 20th, 1945, part one of Fibber, McGee, and Molly.
The Johnson Wax Program with Fibber, McGee, and Molly. The makers of Johnson's Wax products for home and industry present Fibber, McGee, and Molly, written by Don Quinn and Phil Leslie, with music by the King's Men and Billy Mills Orchestra. To all of you young ladies who are starting housekeeping for the first time or plan to start soon, I'd like to say a few words about the modern way of keeping house with wax. It's called protective housekeeping, but it's liked best because it gives such beauty and charm all through the home. And as an extra dividend, it saves you work all year long because cleaning waxed surfaces is so easy. Now, here's how it works. Periodically, depending upon how much use a room has, you apply genuine Johnson's wax to your floors, furniture, and woodwork. You also wax your accessories, such as picture frames, Venetian blinds, ornaments, and leather articles. And with every application of Johnson's wax, their beauty increases. The coat of wax acts as a shield, guarding against dirt, wear, and moisture. Dust and dirt do not cling readily to a waxed surface, and they're easily and quickly removed. So, rule number one in setting up a new home is this. Wax everything right away with genuine Johnson's wax, paste, liquid, or cream. What the harp was to the minstrel, what the lute was to Orpheus, what the piano was to Beethoven, that's what the sound of carpenters at work is to a guy who loves to tinker and putter. So when somebody started to build a new house next door to 79 Wistful Vista, guess who is itching to get over there and kibitz? Yeah, himself, Fibber, McGee, and Molly.
Look at that. Look at the way that mug handles a hammer. He's hit himself on the knuckle so many times, his left hand looks like five sausages stuck on a ham.
Come away from the window, dearie. It's none of our business anyhow. Nobody ever got rich being nosy, except maybe Jimmy Durante.
It is too our business. We can't have a bunch of comedy carpenters lowering property values in this neighborhood. Why, if they go on like they're doing, that joint's going to look like a Swiss railroad station.
Look, sweetheart, I don't imagine those workmen are ad-libbing. They're probably following the architect's plans.
Well, they're reading them backwards or something. Look at how them timbers are cross-braced. That house is going to collapse the first time they play a Spike Jones record on the phonograph.
Well, what house wouldn't?
I'm going over there and talk to them guys. That's what I'm going over there and do.
Oh, now, McGee, for goodness sake.
As a property owner in this neighborhood, I got a right to know
that... Hello, Mrs. McGee, Mr. McGee.
Oh, hello, Alice, dear.
Hi, Alice. You see what's being built next door? You realize we're going to be next door neighbors to a combination grain elevator and Chinese palooka?
Oh, I think you mean a pagoda, Mr. McGee.
I don't mean any such a thing. I know what a pagoda is. A pagoda is a town in California where they grow navel oranges, if you'll pardon the expression.
No, darling, that's Pomona.
Who's kidding who? A Pomona is a Japanese bathrobe with no belt. Everybody knows.
A little confused, Mr. McGee. You're thinking of a kimono.
Oh, I am, am I?
Yes, you am. Or I mean are.
I thought a kimono was an Irish folk song. Oh,
that's a kamali. Oh,
I don't know what chance one guy has against two women. Then what's a palooka in the first place?
A palooka is a chump.
Certainly. Do you think anybody but a chump would build a house that looks like a Mongolian bandstand?
But, Mr. McGee, I know the man who was building that place, and he showed me the architect's drawing. It's going to be a very good-looking southern colonial house.
Oh, I love colonial houses. They always look so colonial.
Now, an old colonial house, eh? A southern mansion.
Mm-hmm.
No wonder it looks so cheap. He's building it with Confederate money.
Did he say it was going to be a southern colonial house, Alice?
No, but I could tell. He's made plans for a mint bed out and back.
Well, don't jump to conclusions, Alice. We got a bird bath out and back, too, but I don't go around washing blue jays either.
Who's the man that's building the house, Alice?
Well, he's a gentleman that I think his name is Vandercook or Beecher or Eldritch or something.
What's it start with?
Well, it all started with a party, a fellow I know that I used to work at the airplane plant who was getting married to a cousin of mine, and this man was invited to it, Gabe.
If his house isn't constructed any better than that sentence, Alice, McGee has a justifiable complaint.
What does this guy do for a living, Alice?
He's retired, I think, Mr. McGee.
Oh.
But he said he used to have a stock on the seed exchange.
A seat on the stock exchange, Alice.
Oh, no, he was a theater ticket broker.
Mm.
Oh.
What does he look like, Alice? What kind of a Jasper is he?
Oh, he's cute, Mr. McGee. Mm-hmm. You're going to like him terribly.
I like him that way now.
And I told him all about you folks and that you'd be next-door neighbors and everything.
Well, good for you, Alice. And what did he say to that?
Oh, his eyes kind of flashed and he ground his teeth a little and said, well, I've got too much invested in that property to stop now. See, I've got to get downtown. Goodbye.
An old colonial mansion, is it? Just an upstart. Why, the way we'll snub that guy is
McGee,
going to be...
Huh? Didn't Dallas say he was putting in a mint bed in his backyard?
Yes, and of all the... mint bed, eh? You know, the man may have a few decent instincts at that. Remind me to drop in on him the first hot summer night next summer and give him the old fraternity grip. After all, he might... Oh, my gosh. Well, you look at him now.
Look at whom doing what?
Those carpenters. Look at that guy with a ripsaw. Why don't he get his back into it? He acts like he was cutting fruitcake or something. Where's my hat? I'm going over
Wait
there.
Wait a minute, McGee. Don't do that. You'll be just in the way.
I'll show them pagodas how to carpenter. I'll show
Wait
them.
Wait for me, dearie. I'll go with you.
I'm going over there.
McGee! Wait for baby! Are you sure we won't be in the way of the carpenters, dearie?
Let's see, when these splinter fingers hear the valuable suggestions I'm going to offer, we'll be as welcome as fresh air in a nightclub.
Yeah, but maybe
now just park your little tweed skirt on a keg of nails and watch old Frank Lloyd Wright McGee. I'll show these lumber jerks how to save a nickel on every tenpenny nail. Hey, bud. You the foreman here?
Yes, sir.
Fine. Where's your blueprints?
Where's my what?
Blueprints. Blueprints. You building this house from a dream book?
Oh, the blueprints. Here they are right here, sir.
Oh, thanks.
May I ask, are you building this place to live in or as an investment?
My gosh, I'm not building it at all, bud.
No, you are.
Yes, I guess that's right. Well, it's going to be a very handsome house anyway. Very well planned. You're going to like it.
I hope so. We're going to be seeing a lot of it.
There's a few things I ain't satisfied with, though, bud. Now, let me see. What kind of heat you got scheduled?
Oil.
Forget it. Put in a coal furnace. With oil heat, how are you going to get ashes to sprinkle on the sidewalk when it gets icy?
Why don't you build some hot pipes under the sidewalk to melt the ice?
Great, Molly, great. Do that, bud.
Well, yeah, but the architect says...
Oh, never mind what the architect says. bunch of impractical dreamers. They spend 6 years in Italy studying Greek architecture so they can come home and build Spanish bungalows with French windows for a lot of Yankees who don't know an English basement from a Turkish bath. Put in coal.
Okay, sir. Anything you say.
Now, a few more things and you can get to work, Si. Now, double the size of the garage, for one thing. Make a storeroom out of it. Make the attic a playroom. Make all the closets larger. Cedar lining in all of them. And move that front porch around to the west side.
What's that for, Pet?
The boy that delivers the evening paper is left-handed. Besides, the driveway's on that side. Okay, bud, get busy now. I'll have some other suggestions for you a little later.
Yes, sir.
Hey, boys, forget what you're doing. We got some changes to make. Now, look, tear out the study room.
Do you realize, I suppose, McGee, that he thinks you're the owner of the house?
It's a good thing I'm not. If I was the owner and a guy like me came messing around, I'd throw me out of here so fast on my
clutch. Hello, Molly. Hello, Standing Bull.
Oh, hello, Dr. Gamble.
Hi, body snatcher. What brings you out in broad daylight amongst honest men and decent women?
I admit that Molly is a decent woman, but if you're referring to yourself as an honest man, Titmouse, you are the worst judge of character I ever knew, and I've never met a good one, except myself.
Are you really a good judge of character, Doctor?
Oh, sure he is. He can take one gander at a man and tell whether he's got $5 and a tummy ache or $300 and appendicitis.
Ignoring the slanderous remarks of the man you so unfortunately married, my dear, I might say that I'm practically a genius at analyzing character. The minute I meet a man who gives me that firm blacksmith handshake and looks me straight in the eye, I know I'm in the presence of a wife-beater, a dog-kicker, and a waiter-baiter.
Well, not me, Doctor. I'm no judge of people. I like everybody immediately.
Yeah, she even likes you, Doc. And if that ain't an outstanding case of bad judgment, are you going bowling tonight?
No, my boy. That's what I stopped by to tell you.
Oh.
I'm expecting one of my patients to make the next census richer by one small item.
Oh, I see.
But tell me, why are you hanging around this building project? Waiting your chance to steal some lumber?
No, he's just offering some suggestions about the new house, Doctor. And he has some dandies, too.
I'll say. My idea for a little platform on the roof so they could go up there and watch for the mailman was a nifty, if I do say so myself.
It was indeed. The owner can also go up there with a high-powered rifle and drill you right between the eyes. And as close together as your eyes are, that's pretty fancy shooting.
Well, I'm sorry you can't go out with McGee tonight, Doctor. I was hoping you'd come to dinner.
Yeah. Want to have a nice rump roast, Doc?
Well, just as well, friends. Can't eat rump roast for sentimental reasons.
Sentimental reasons, huh?
Yes, I had a cousin who died of one at Sing Sing. Well, hasta la vista, amigos.
That is the first portion of Fibber, McGee, and Molly, November 20th, 1945. People would just drop in at 79 Wistful Vista. Do people just ring your doorbell?
Well, you know
what?
They're
in the rich area of Illinois.
Sometimes people just drop by the radio studio. You just never know who's going to come
by. This is true. But do you get like, does your doorbell just ring out there in...
In nowhere?
You know, where everything's made of gold, where you live?
Oh.
In platinum.
Yeah, well, sometimes the butler drops by, or my chauffeur, my chef, you know.
Well, they have multiple chefs,
right,
and butlers.
I have various doorbells for different people,
right.
So I know who it's going to be, and then a speaker system.
Does that happen? When your door? Here's the thing. You know, when I was growing up and the doorbell rang, it was like, okay, you know, you go to the door, you'd get the doorbell, you know, you get the door, somebody
would
be there.
Well, I have a guy at my iron
now,
gate,
the
and
doorbell,
he decides if he should open the gate or not, so
right.
I feel safe that way.
Now the doorbell rings, and you're like, oh, my God, what's going on? Who's at the door? What the heck?
Maybe you need a dog, Carl.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I need a companion. I need a little doggy.
I said dog. I meant something else.
All right, let's take a quick break. Then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right, WGN Radio Theater. That's the name of our radio program, Lisa Wolf.
What's up, Carl? You with us?
I'm here.
Okay,
yeah,
good. Just
I'm
making
here.
Sure.
It is 12:37. We are listening to Fibber, McGee, and Molly. Let's join Jim and Marion Jordan from November 20th, 1945.
Sweet old character, though.
Hey, fellas.
Yeah?
I just had a good idea. Have Willie West and McGinty there put a little balcony outside the master's bedroom so he can stand there over the swimming pool and practice fly casting.
I didn't know the plans called for a swimming pool, dearie.
They don't. And add a swimming pool, bud. 44 by 20.
We haven't got room for a pool that big.
Well, then make it 10 feet shorter and 10 feet deeper.
Okay.
Did you see the funny look he gave you, McGee? Yeah,
these guys aren't used to a man who can make snappy decisions. Most people fuss around for 10 days about where to build the ironing board. They think that...
McGee?
Huh?
Say, look at that man sawing over there. Why, he isn't half trying.
And what's more, he's using a cross-cut saw when he ought to be using a rip saw. Hey, Bud, come here a minute.
Yes, sir. Something you wanted?
Well, heavenly days, Mr. Wilcox.
What are you doing here working as a carpenter, Junior? Asked fun-loving little Fibber, dancing up and down with excitement.
Oh, I do this every once in a while, pal. I love to work with wood. I like the feel of it, the smell of it.
Do you really, Mr. Wilcox?
Yes, really. I guess it runs in the family. My uncle, Big Paul Bunyan Wilcox, was the same way. Just loved wood. He'd eat 6 meals a day just for an excuse to chew on a toothpick. Sometimes I think that's why I'm in the business I'm in.
You mean?
Yes, selling Johnson's wax.
Oh, you got us, Waxy. You got it. I could see it coming, but I didn't know from what direction.
Yes, when I think how Johnson's wax brings out the beauty of wood surfaces, how it seals the pores of wood against dust and dampness and dirt, and gives it such a gleaming sanitary freshness, well, it just makes me feel good all over.
You sound like you might be a descendant of that great nobleman, Sir Cashin Walnut.
Just as a matter of curiosity, Waxy, why were you using a cross-cut saw over there? Sawing with the grain, you ought to use a rip saw.
Oh, no, no. A rip saw is so ruthless. It tears the wood. I can't stand that. I like to handle wood gently, tenderly.
Oh, my God.
Heavenly day.
That's why I like to be around new houses like this, to see the wood being fitted into place. The door frames, the floors, the windowsills, the paneling. Getting ready for their first application of Johnson's wax.
Oh, sure.
Sometimes I wish I were a piece of wood.
Oh, sure.
So I could be Johnson wax and admired by everybody and live so long and reflect a spirit of cleanliness and hospitality. Well, got to get back to work, folks. Nice to have seen you.
Can you imagine that? Sometimes he wishes he was a piece of wood.
Sometimes I wish he was, too. I'd make him into a hardwood floor and take up tap dancing. Oh, well, I guess we all have our little eccentricities. Hey, do you think this house would look good with a big stoop in front?
Who did you have in mind?
I think I'll take these blueprints home, Molly, and work them over. There's several more changes I want to make. Come on, let's go.
All right, dearie, but I hope the owner of this house... Oh, look, McGee, there goes Mrs. Carstairs. Yoo-hoo, Mrs. Carstairs!
Remind me to buy you a moose call for Christmas. She couldn't resist a good, strong honk on that.
Now, be nice, dearie. She's really a fine woman.
She's a pain in the clavicle. She's so doggone refined, she turns her head away when she takes the pants off her lamb chops.
Well, my goodness. She may be a little stuffy, but... Ah, hello there, Mrs. Carstairs. So nice to see you.
How do you do, my dear? Good day, Mr. McGee.
Hi, Carsty. I was just telling Molly what a sight you are for sore eyes.
Thank you.
We've been looking over this new house they're building here, Mrs. Carstairs. McGee has a few suggestions and changes to make.
Really? I was not aware, Mr. McGee, that your various talents included a gift for architectural design.
Well, you really don't know me very well, Carsty.
I shall bear it in mind all day Thursday.
Heavenly days. Thursday's Thanksgiving.
Yes, isn't it? By the way, my dear, I had intended to ask you for dinner Thursday evening, but I happened to think that I couldn't ask your husband, as he would make 13 at the table.
Oh, that's okay, Karsty. I ate enough for two people, so really be 14. Now, what time will we be there?
Oh, rather late-ish, you know.
Well, just as late-ish as you like, Mrs. Carstairs. Say, 7:30-ish?
Yeah. We could even make it 9-ish or 9:45-ish, if necessary-ish.
No, 8 o'clock would be splendid.
Do we dress, Mrs. Carstairs?
What do you mean, do we dress? What kind of a...
Black tie, Mr. McGee.
Thank you very much, Mrs. Carstairs. We'll be there with bells on.
Oh, that will be quite harmonious, my dear. I'm sure that some of my other guests will be rather jingled by dinner time. Well, good day.
And here are the King's Men with the typewriter serenade.
79 Wistful Vista, 1945. I take my Underwood in hand and hasten to reply. Oh, tap-a-tap-a-ting, tap-a-tap-a-ting, tap-a-tap-a-ting. It's singing, singing you the news in a little typewriter serenade. Every little tap means a little kiss. Tap-a-tap-a-ting. It's ringing, bringing you my heart in a little typewriter serenade. And while I'm typing out this letter, I'd let her enclose more kisses. Tap-a-tap-a-ting, tap-a-tap-a-ting, tap-a-tap-a-ting. It is ending, sending you my love in a little typewriter serenade, serenade, serenade. Page one is through, and here's page two. Just a line or two telling you what's new so you won't be blue, my darling. Sending you the news in a little typewriter serenade.
I called upon the gums. Junior had the mumps. Gee, I'm in the dumps.
I miss you. Thought I'd tell you so in a little typewriter serenade.
And while I'm writing you this letter, I'd better get finished with it.
So I'll say goodnight. Don't forget to write till I hold you tight. Real soon, dear. Here's all my love in a little typewriter serenade, 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 serenade. The typewriter serenade.
Hey, Molly. I've done these blueprints practically all over, and you'd never recognize that house.
Now, look, dearie. Fun is fun, but do you realize how your butting in might strike the owner of that house?
What do you mean, butting in? I've improved that joint 100%. Oh. I take the powder room, for instance. Who else would have thought of putting in green lights so the guests would think they were getting sick and go home? We won't have to go to Carsty's Thanksgiving, Molly. We're having our turkey now. And who
Come
else
in.
Would have ever had... Come in.
Good day. I'm one of your neighbors.
Yeah, we know, sis. You're the cousin of Punchy McFight, the prize clatcher.
No, he means you're the fighter of Punchy McCousin, the clatch prize.
No, no. I meant she was the prize of Cousin McClatchy.
I am the cousin of Punchy McClatchy, the prize fighter.
Certainly.
Well, what about it, sis?
Well, just to be neighborly, I thought you might want to put a wager on the fight tonight. Punchy is fighting Cauliflower Connolly, you know. It's a sure thing.
Well, thank you very much, dearie. Well,
thanks for the tip, sis. I'll slap a $2 wager on your cousin.
You mean you're betting on Punchy?
Sure.
Oh, you fool, you!
Well, she doesn't seem to have much faith in her own cousin, does she?
Come to think of it, I don't know why she should. That McClatchy has taken more pokes than all the pickpockets on Broadway. That stumblebum has swallowed so many of his own teeth, his stomach chatters on cold days. Why, if he'd only...
Oh,
ever...
never mind him, McGee. I'm worried about all those changes you made on that new house next door.
Oh, what are you worried about that for? I improved it, didn't I? My gosh, what kind of a neighbor would I be to stand around and see a house?
Oh, dear, every time that doorbell rings, I get a chill. I can just see the man who owns that house laying you out with a 2x4.
Ah, patah, I can handle him. Come in.
Oh, it's Mayor LaTrivia. Good day, Your Honor.
Good day, Mrs. McGee. Hello, McGee.
Hi, LaTriv. I'll be with you in just a moment. I got to finish checking over these blueprints.
Isn't he clever, Mr. Mayor?
See, you know.
Just think of anybody knowing what all those little white lines mean.
I didn't know you could read blueprints, McGee. In fact, I didn't know you could read. I had it on fairly good authority that you had even been blackballed by the Book of the Month Club.
Ah, Mr. Mayor, you rascal, you.
Let me see. If I use the laundry chute as a chimney for the barbecue pit, then I can put the breakfast in.
May I ask just what you think you're doing, McGee?
Well, he's making some changes on that new house next door, Mr. Mayor.
Yeah.
I trust, my friend, that you have acquainted yourself with the building regulations, fire laws, zoning requirements, frontage rules, and all stuff like that. All that sort of thing?
Oh, he doesn't believe in those silly regulations, Your Honor.
Oh, he doesn't.
No, that's for amateurs. I go on the principle of get your building up and then fight the city hall. You probably don't know any more about building regulations than I do.
That is where you are wrong, McGee. I have the entire code in my head.
Sorry, Mr. Mayor. Can I run upstairs? Can I go up and get you some nose drops or something?
Nose drops? For what, Mrs. McGee?
For your nose, naturally. Unless you want to use them to oil your roller skates.
I don't know what you're talking about, McGee, but I don't want or need any nose drops. Thank you, just the same.
Well, maybe a nice hot gargle would be better anyway.
Make him take the nose drops, Molly. They're much better than a gargle.
What is this anyway? I don't want a gargle, and I don't want any nose drops.
Ah, don't be a baby, Your Honor. They don't hurt. My goodness, if I had a cold in my head...
But I haven't got a cold in my head.
You said you did.
I said no such thing.
Why, Mr. Mayor, you said distinctly that you had the entire cold in your head. Which is very lucky because if it gets to your...
I did not say I had a code. I was referring to building regulations. And I said I had the code in my head.
Head is so stuffy, he can't even say cold.
Well, anyway, I'll get the nose drops. It won't take but a...
I don't want any stuff drop. Cold, no. I mean, I haven't got a sign of a gargle. My head is perfectly empty. McGee!
Huh?
Pardon me. When I came in here, I didn't have a... Now you see what you've done. You've talked me into it.
Fine thing. Gets a cold and blames us for it.
Oh, well, he's probably running a little fever and don't know what he's doing. You gotta be big about these things. He's always such...
I'll bet he does want some nose drops after all. Come in.
Where is he?
Where's who, sir?
Where's the man who took the blueprints for my new house?
Oh, you mean these blueprints, bud? I was just looking them over to...
Are you the fellow who took it upon himself to change my house completely around?
Well, you see, bud, I figured...
We thought...
Why, the whole plan's been changed. Nothing's the way I originally planned it. This is going to take 3 months longer, going to cost me $11,000 more. And you know what?
No.
What?
I like it. Now, show me on the blueprints what you think I ought to do about this.
You've noticed, I'm sure, how you develop a friendly feeling for certain things you use or wear. Maybe it's a favorite sport coat. Maybe it's a household appliance that makes your work easier. It might even be Johnson's Glow Coat, because that very useful floor polish certainly saves you work and adds great beauty to your home, too. Women like Glow Coat for three very good reasons. First, it does save them many hours of work all year long. There's no rubbing or buffing with Johnson's Glow Coat because it's self-polishing. You simply apply it to your linoleum or other floors and let it dry. Second, Glow Coat gives your linoleum a beautiful polish that's easy to maintain, and it keeps colors new-looking. And third, regular care with Glow Coat adds greatly to the life of your linoleum, new or old. because it protects the surface against dirt, wear, and moisture. For these three good reasons, Johnson's Self-Polishing Glow Coat is the preferred floor polish everywhere.
Hey, Molly, you know what?
Know what?
That guy's building a big apartment house on the west side. Wants me to oversee the job for $5,000.
Oh, how wonderful. Huh? When do you start?
I turned it down.
What on earth for?
Oh, my gosh. I just haven't got the nerve to ask Alice and Doc and Karsty and Harlow and Latrivia and Billy and the King's Men to go clear over on the west side every Tuesday.
Yeah, there's that, isn't there?
Certainly. Good night.
Good night, all.
This is Harlow Wilcox speaking for the makers of Johnson's Wax Products for Home and Industry and inviting you all to be with us again next Tuesday night. Good night.
This is the National Broadcasting Company.
That is Fibber, McGee, and Molly, November 20th, 1945. McGee and the Architect there. Jim and Marion Jordan married in real life. They were married for many, many years. They did Fibber, McGee, and Molly for like 30 years on the radio. And they were in some movies, too, like Look Who's Laughing and some other things like that. It did make a transition to television. Not very good on TV, although they were not the stars of the TV show. I think it was Bob Sweeney and Kathy Lewis were the stars on TV. It was just a complete bomb on television. Really, Fibber, McGee, and Molly was all about radio and the theater of the mind and people dropping by, these funny characters. Harlow Wilcox doing the announcing on there. And I have made a decision, Lisa. I made it today while listening to this Fibber, McGee, and Molly show.
I know what you're
going
to say.
If I ever have another baby.
Right. His or her name is Harlow.
I'm going to name it Harlow.
I know. I feel really confident that that won't happen.
I feel really confident about it, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, that it won't happen.
It's possible, though. It's possible, but if you don't break the glass case around your pillow,
it's never going to happen.
Probably won't work.
And that glass case is getting a lot of dust. It's got about a half inch thick dust on it now.
Yeah, well,
so
to
I
work
don't know.
On that.
My pillow is just it's entombed in that glass case there. There's a hammer there though.
Okay. Well, you let me know when something changes, would you?
I will definitely let you know. All right, well, thanks. Let's take a quick break. Then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right, you know what, Lisa? This is hour 3, which
sure
means
is.
We have 1 hour left of the show, and in this hour, we are going to play Frank Sinatra as Rocky Fortune from 1954, and we want to thank all our listeners for staying up late with us as well.
Right.
You want to say something?
It is so funny. I'm going to wait for you to ask me what movie that we are doing for Crack the Quote.
Oh, okay.
What superhero have we just been talking about?
Batman.
Yep, it's Batman Begins, 2005.
What? Okay, I'm trying to think. Batman Begins, 2005. That was like Val Kilmer, or was that?
I didn't.
Was that
see
George
it.
Clooney?
It
was
no,
one
no,
of
no.
The...
I think that was when they rebooted it.
Yes.
With, what's his name? He did.
That was the reboot.
He did just three of them, and that was it. Where he burned down his home, or.
Huh?
Somebody, you don't remember that?
No, are you talking about the early, like the very first time they rebooted it?
This is where they rebooted after Val Kilmer, after they had that series of different actors playing Batman.
Oh, so then was it?
It was gone for a little while, and then it. What's his name?
I'm looking it up right now.
The same guy, yeah.
This
he did.
Is,
he played all three. I mean, he played in the.
Christian
the guy
Bale.
From American Christian Psycho.
Bale.
Yeah.
Christian Bale.
Yeah.
Yes, Bale.
Right.
Christian
yes.
Bale. Yeah, American
Thank
Psycho
you.
Guy.
Yeah. I don't know.
All right. Well, there you go. So it's Batman Begins.
Batman Begins 2005.
Okay. So what do they win?
They're going to win a Twilight Zone. It's a 4-CD set.
312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. That's the number to call. Give us a call right now. Play the game with us. We'll take caller 3. We'll see you in just a few.
It's time now for Crack the Quote, brought to you by Cat's Pride.
How much have we paid Roger now?
I feel like it's on like slow motion when he's saying that. Is that really you, or did he like slow it down or something?
I touch the ice.
Crack
slow
the quote.
I
think you were half asleep, perchance.
I was hypnotized.
Let's say hi to Glenn.
Hi, Glenn. How are you?
Hi, Lisa. Hi, Carl.
Hey, what's up, Glenn?
Not too much. Just sitting back listening to your show, as I always do.
Well,
thank you.
That's a good thing
What
to
did
do.
You think of the Frankenstein suspense episode. Did you like that?
Yeah, well, I like them all. You know?
Oh,
I mean,
good. All right.
Because I like the old radio shows, and you know, it's just interesting to think about what my dad and stuff, you know.
Yeah.
I was going to say, you sound very young, too. Yeah.
Well, I'm 63.
Well, you sound very young.
Well, that's young, and you didn't grow up during these times, so very cool. All right, let's see if you can we can get this right for you here.
All right, Batman Begins. Here we go. Number one, I've always hated criminals and crime. Number two, there's something quite fascinating about crooks and criminals. Number three, criminals thrive on the indulgence of society's understanding.
What?
What? Number three. Should I say them all again?
You know who
again?
That is, right, Roger?
Penguin.
Yeah.
Roger, did you hear all of them?
I'm not sure if you finished the last one, but I know which one I want to pick, so.
I'm going to ask you first, Roger.
You want to pick.
What do you want to pick?
I know exactly what you want to pick. But you're on TV, so you can't.
I know.
He's not.
Yes, he is.
I'm right here.
It's a closed circuit.
He's on TV.
All right. Close circuit.
I'll go with number two.
Number two, there's something quite fascinating about crooks and criminals. What were you thinking,
no.
Glenn?
Go ahead, Glenn.
Glenn,
what do you
like?
I'm going to go with number two, too.
Nah.
There's something quite fascinating about crooks. You don't like that? You don't think it's fascinating, Carl?
No, I think it's number one.
Number one, I've always hated criminals and crime.
Yeah.
Okay, Shante, let's hear it.
Criminals thrive on the indulgence of society's
understanding.
It was number three. I'm so sorry you got it wrong, Roger.
Wait a minute. Everybody got
She threw
wrong.
Us because she, like,
you
laughed.
You were laughing on the last one, and
that's
that
because
threw
I,
everyone
it
off.
Sounded so ridiculous when yes. I said it. It didn't even sound real. And I'm like, this can't be the one. But, of course, it was the one. I threw you. But it doesn't matter. Glenn's a winner. He's won a Twilight Zone. It's a 4-CD set hosted by Stacey Keach. Hours and hours of enjoyment. So I hope that you enjoy that.
Way to go, Glenn.
Okay. You know, I had won once before a Twilight Zone.
Did you like it?
Yeah. Now, will it be a different one now?
I don't know.
There are a lot of different volumes, so we'll cross our fingers.
Probably.
Okay.
All right, buddy.
Thanks
a lot. Appreciate you. All right. So, Roger, he's just banking this. He gets what? That's $6 a week.
Yeah, but after taxes.
No, but you know what? He actually wasn't here last night. I mean, until 12:30, so he probably should only get half for that night.
I was in the house.
She's my agent.
I was here at 11:00.
But you weren't on the air. David was on the air. So I was going to say $1.50 for the night.
Fine.
All right.
Fine.
Minus 20%.
Fine. Use David's voice on it.
Hey, you know, I just recently had my Jeep detailed by this company, Renewed Rides.
Oh, really? They're,
you know what's great about them, Renewed
Why?
Rides? They actually come out to you and do the detailing.
No way.
Because I used to get tired of going to the detail shop and have to wait there for 3 hours, right?
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, so now with Renewed Rides, they'll come out to you, and they come out to McHenry, Lake, Kane, and parts of Cook counties. So go to their website, renewedrides.com. The great thing, too, is their prices are lower than most detail shops that make you bring your vehicle in. So check it out, renewedrides.com.
You should send them out to my
That's
house.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
You sent them to your house.
Well, they'll have to set up like a whole week at your house with all the cars you got.
You got the Bentley, the Maybach, the Rolls.
Don't she have the limo?
She's got a limo.
I don't care about the limo.
You'd be a really good account for Renewed Rides.
Yeah, you have to send them over. They can spend a few weeks.
Check that out. All right, so it is time now for Rocky Fortune. And you know what? This was a really cool series, Roger. Mm-hmm. He was like an amateur detective. He really wasn't like a detective.
Right.
But he was like a guy looking for work all the time, right? Mm-hmm. And he would bounce from one job to another as a bodyguard for somebody or something else. And all the time, you know what would happen. He would get embroiled in a murder case of some sort.
Yep.
And he worked for, he actually used a company called the Gridley Employment Agency. He was always looking for work, and then he would always have to end up solving a murder, and he would get involved in it, and sometimes they think he was the murderer, but of course he, Frank Sinatra, of course not.
Never.
I mean, the chairman of the board.
Yeah.
So this ran for one season. Let's tune it in. Here's a broadcast from March 9th, 1954. It's called Let's Find a Murderer, Frank Sinatra, in part one of Rocky Fortune.
Frank Sinatra, transcribed as Rocky Fortune. Frank Sinatra, starring as that footloose and fancy-free young gentleman, Rocky Fortune.
According to the insurance guys, an average joker like me can expect to show up on the census for about 66 years before he shuffles off the old mortal coil. However, an old buddy of mine who knows about these things says that in the case of certain unfortunate citizens, the statistics are not valid. And then he proceeds to produce a fresh corpse to prove it.
Will it be, Mac?
Let me have a beer, will you, Doc?
Jack?
Rocky. Rocky Fortunato.
Huh?
Don't you remember me?
Wait a minute.
PS-46, the baseball team.
PS-46? Hey, that takes me back a long way.
Sammy! Sammy Makinson from Bleakman Street.
Holy mackerel.
Green paint the Fortunato with the Merkinson. Best double play combo in green paint.
Well, how are you, Sam?
Never better. How's yourself?
Able to sit up and take a little nourishment, kid? What's new? What you doing with yourself?
Me? You never believe. I'm an actuary.
A who?
Actuary. I figure out statistical probabilities. Like if such and such happens, then probably such and such will happen. How about you?
Right now I'm in the same kind of business, generally. I'm what you might call a horse actuary.
Yeah?
Yeah, only I ain't so good. This morning I bet on a horse to show. If I figured right, I would only bet on him to live.
So you're between jobs again, huh?
You know me, Sammy. I get restless.
Still looking for the bluebird, huh? Yeah, how many times a month you used to run away when we were kids? Three at least.
Yeah. Well, it's good to see you, Sammy.
Hey! You can't just run away. I got things to talk about. Come on, let me buy you a drink. Come on, I'm celebrating.
No kidding. You sell a big policy?
Sell a policy? No. Hey, Rock.
Huh?
I'm gonna get married.
No kidding.
Yeah. Girl works here in the building. Secretary.
Well, well.
So you see, you gotta have a drink with me. To celebrate, right?
Why not? Bartender? Anesthetic. Forty-5 minutes and 90 proof later, Sam and I are just entering the third grade at PS-46, and we got about 6 more years to relive. And by this time, my lips are beginning to get numb, and the same waitress who looked like Marjorie Maine half an hour ago is now beginning to take on proportions like Marilyn DiMaggio.
Rocky, pal, yeah, you're the salt of the earth. Rock, another drink.
Well, well, if it ain't the old A&P gypsy himself. Hiya, Rock.
Sergeant, didn't your mother tell you you ought to stay out of places like this?
Rocky, we were very poor when I was a boy. I couldn't afford a mother.
That's just what I thought. Sergeant Hamilton J. Finger, meet my old buddy boy, Sammy Merkinson.
Our pleasure.
You two boys look like you didn't just arrive.
Gee, ain't it the truth. I was just walking along, minding my own business, when this sneak here pulls a bar on me. What could I do?
You're a detective?
Homicide.
Hey, have one with us, Sarge?
Never touch it on duty.
He's on duty. What a soft touch, huh?
There's a murder being committed every minute in this country.
So why ain't you out arresting somebody?
Listen to him.
I'm a taxpayer. You're wasting my money.
Go find a murderer.
They ain't so easy to come by.
Ain't so easy with a murder every minute? Old Rock, you and me, we could go out and find one just like that.
Well, if you see anybody, you let me know, huh? So long, fellas. Take it easy.
See you around, Sarge.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a nice fella. He's stupid, but he's nice. He's a good cop, too.
Nice. He's a bum.
Careful, Sammy. This man's a friend of mine.
I repeat, as a detective, he's a bum.
What makes you say?
There's probably murderers right in this room.
What makes you say?
Figures.
Why?
Why? Oh, Rock, you ever heard of the law of probabilities, Geest?
You got a law about that, too?
That's my business.
Yeah.
Actuary. I'm telling you, it figures that there's a corpse around, and if there's a corpse, ipso facto.
I'll take your word.
That's more like it. Go on, let's go.
You're where?
Find the murderer.
Wait a minute.
What, you got something better to do?
Nah, I guess not.
Okay, pal. Come on, let's go find us a murderer.
I haven't finished my drink yet.
That don't matter. We'll case this place first, right?
Right.
Somewhere in the back of my soggy brain, something told me this was all silly, but somehow I really didn't care. So we spent the next 10 minutes standing at the bar looking for suspects. What's wrong?
Shh. What? I see one.
One what?
A murderer.
Where?
Oh, Rock, over the end.
Over the end of the bar.
Yeah. Don't you see the little mousy-looking guy with the bald hair?
Him?
Come on.
Okay. Now, wait. Now, how do we handle it? We gain his confidence?
No, we startle him. C'est moi?
We scare him. Huh?
Sure. Okay. All right, Jack. Where'd you put the body?
Are you gentlemen from the police?
Yeah, that'd be... Quit stalling.
Are you kidding?
Yes, I see you are. Well, I intended to go over to you. Really, I did, but... Well, I came down to have a few drinks to get up my courage.
A likely story.
Likely.
Well, usually, gentlemen, I go right home to my wife, Helen. Tonight, after I killed the girl...
Hey, Sam.
Huh?
This guy sounds for real.
Yeah. I told you he was a likely suspect. Okay, mister...
Crispy is the name. Arthur H. Crispy. I work for the Paramount Insurance Company on the 55th floor.
I like that. A competitor of ours.
Oh, gentlemen, it's no joke, I assure you. I committed a murder less than an hour ago.
Hey, we better go up and identify the body.
Wait a minute. What's the name of the guy you murdered?
Oh, it wasn't a guy. It was a girl. Ethel. Ethel Harkins. She works in our office.
How did you happen to kill her?
Well, I had been seeing her, if you know what I mean.
Uh-huh.
And it was expensive. Ethel's the kind of a girl who liked to go nice places and wear nice things, and I'm in the accounting department, and I began taking money. Not much at a time, but it adds up.
Gee, don't I know it.
I decided about a week ago I'd stop seeing her. I told her tonight, and she was furious. She wanted money. She said I'd been using her. She threatened to tell my employers, and it would have ruined me. I tried to stop her, but she began to raise her voice, and I began to choke her, and she fell on the floor.
How do you like that? Ask him where he stashed the body.
Yeah, where?
Well, I left it in my office, in the closet. Came down here to get a drink to steady my nerves until I figured out what to do, and you gentlemen must work awfully fast.
Sammy?
Well, we better go take a look.
Yeah.
Well, I don't think that I can face it, gentlemen. Here's the key to my office. Now, if you like...
Hey, tell you what. I'll stay here and see this buster don't get away, see?
Yeah.
You go up and find the body and call the cops. Right?
Okay.
Here's the key. 55, and my name is on the door.
You're an executive?
Well, sort of an executive.
What sort?
Vice president.
Thank you.
stumble to the elevators and climb into an empty one. A smart-aleck cat in a monkey jacket gives me a smart-aleck look, and we begin negotiations for the 55th floor.
Going up, floor, please.
55, and don't spare the cables.
Well, fasten your safety belts, and away we go. Ooh, ooh. 55, watch your step, please.
Thanks. When you come up again, would you bring up my heels? I think I left them about the 48th floor.
And that's the first portion of Rocky Fortune, broadcast from March 9th, 1954. Let's Find a Murderer is the title of that. Let's take a quick break. We'll be right back.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right, we're listening to, you're enjoying this, Roger, by the way, Frank Sinatra.
I love Frank Sinatra.
Anything with Frank Sinatra in it, I like it. I'm a big Sinatra fan.
Mm-hmm.
I have all of his records. I just have all the Capitol records.
Sure.
Just love Sinatra.
Yeah.
You know, years and years ago, Roger, you may have, because I know and I thank you, you used to buy a lot of my classic radio products.
Mm-hmm.
I came out with a 60-episode collection of Frank Sinatra at one point.
And of all the different shows that he was on.
Yeah, like sometimes there were musical shows like Your Hit Parade and things like that, Lux Theater, Suspense. Mm-hmm. He did some Suspense. And I'm working on something else with the Sinatra Estate right now.
Ooh.
So I can't really say what it is, but I am working with the Sinatra Estate about coming out with something really interesting with Frank Sinatra.
That'd be really cool.
So when it comes out, you can buy it, Roger. We'll let you know. It's
only
for, charge for sale.
I'll start saving my money now because I know
exactly
it's going
right.
to
Yeah, you can charge
big.
Triple.
Oh, thank you.
It'll be really expensive, but it'll be for sale.
But you'll like it. I guarantee you'll like it.
I know.
You'll have to take out a second mortgage on your home, but you will like it.
Wait a minute. What happened to the first?
All right, let's get back now to Rocky Fortune.
I use Arthur Crispy's key to let myself into the offices of the Paramount Insurance Company and stumble my way past a row of doors till I come to one marked Arthur H. Crispy. Underneath it in gold letters, it says Vice President. The door ain't locked, so I turn the knob, slip in, and turn on the light. Well, well. Hello, operator. Get me to the 21st precinct. Sergeant Hamilton J. Finger on duty? Yeah. Hello, Ham. That's Rocky. Listen, Unc. Slip your metatarsal pads on and get over to the office of the Paramount Insurance Company in the Sun Building. Yeah, 55th floor. You know that corpse we were joking about? It's here. A blonde. No, I ain't having any DTs. Come on, will you? This is for the brass ring. I hang up the phone and start to turn around just in time for whoever sneaked in behind me to lower the 6 o'clock boom. I feel the thud.
Oh!
And somebody pulls the blackout curtains inside my brain. Wow.
Come on, take it easy, Rocky. Take it easy.
Oh!
Come on.
Oh, hello, Sarge.
Is he all right?
Okay, what happened?
What happened? I came up and I saw the body of the blonde on the floor and somebody belted me just as I... The body. Where is it?
It's just what I was going to ask you.
It was right there on the floor, aren't it, Sarge?
So were you. From what Mr. Merkinson tells me, you and Mr. Crispy here and him had all a real ball down in that bar.
Now, look, if you're trying to tell me there wasn't any such corpse...
But there was, I tell you. I strangled her with my own hands.
Oh, sure.
Listen, wait a minute, there's somebody coming.
All right, now you just shut up till we find out who it is.
So there you are.
Hello, dear.
Don't hello dear me. You realize I've been waiting at the restaurant for 2 hours, and don't try to tell me it was a business conference. I can smell the alcohol from here.
It wasn't a business conference, dear. This gentleman is from Homicide. Sergeant, this is my wife, Mrs. Crispy.
Homicide? Oh, no. Arthur, you haven't been telling them that story about the corpse
again.
My
dear.
What's this?
Every time he gets a few drinks in him, he starts confessing to a murder. Last week, he announced to my sewing club that he had just strangled his boss and 7 vice presidents. Fortunately, everyone thought it was funny.
Helen, you're just making this up. You don't know what happened.
Well, if everybody is sobered up a little now, I'll be running along.
But I killed her.
And I saw the body.
Well, statistically, it figures. The law of probability.
The law of probability says I will probably throw the whole slew of you into the clink if you get me out on any more wild turkey hunts. How do I get out of here?
Well, you can take the executive car. Just turn to your left.
Thanks.
I'll join you.
Me too.
I think I need one, too.
Arthur.
But I'll skip it this time.
On the way down to the executive car, I try to convince Finger that what I saw was not a hallucination. But by the time we reach the ground floor, he's practically got me believing it was. Sammy and I go back into the bar to think things over. I don't get it, Sam. I just don't get it. I saw that blonde with marks on her throat.
What figures?
Somebody conked me and took the body someplace else. But the question is, who?
Well, it couldn't have been Crispy. He was with me till we got worried about you and went up.
Somebody must have been hiding behind the door when I walked into Crispy's office.
Wasn't you, was it, Rock?
What?
I mean, you didn't move the body yourself, did you?
What makes you think so?
Well, look, kid, that ain't ketchup on your sleeve, and we ain't been eating raspberries, so it must be blood.
Huh? Holy mackerel, how did that get there?
From moving the body, maybe?
Don't be ridiculous. Excuse me a minute, Sam.
Where you going?
Wash the stain off in the washer. I'll be right back. So Sammy and I resume where we left off. We're there maybe, 5 minutes, still trying to figure an answer. Something screwy about all this, Sam. I saw that corpse as plain as day.
It figures, Rock. It figures.
Now, somebody must have...
Gentlemen.
Buster, what are you doing here?
I sneaked away from my wife.
So?
Mr. Fortune, Mr. Merkinson, you've got to believe me. I did choke that girl. She was in my office. I'll never rest until somebody believes me.
I believe you, Crispy, but nobody believes us.
If there was a corpse there, where is it?
That's a good question. If there was a corpse.
But I tell you that...
Hey, Rock. Tell me, you been eating shrimp cocktail?
What? What's that got to do with anything?
Nothing. Only if that ain't cocktail sauce on your sleeve, what is it?
Hey, now, how did that stuff get there?
Well, you better wash it off before it stains.
Yeah. Yeah, I better do that. I head for the washroom when suddenly lightning strikes and I make my way to the executive elevator instead. I get in the car and shut the door, only I don't press the button. Not just yet. I check my sleeve. Where there was only one red spot, there are now 2. A second later, there are 3. It could be that the drinks are too strong, but it ain't. So I chin myself up, open the escape hatch that they have on the roof of every elevator. Sure enough, there on top of the car is the dead body of Ethel Hawkins. The same body I found in Crispy's office. I'm just about getting ready to run for the cops when somebody upstairs presses the button. The door closes and we start to rise. Honey, I don't know about you, but I'm getting over the first stop. Pardon me, this is where... Well, well, if it isn't Mrs. Crispy.
I'm looking for Arthur. What's that?
My companion? It appears to be a corpse. Come on in.
With that?
Why not? You've seen her before.
What do you mean?
I mean, you're the one who found her in Arthur's office and moved her out to the elevator.
You're insane. Why would I do a thing like that?
You tell me.
What makes you even think...
Okay, let's have it.
Well, I suppose I may as well tell you. I began to wonder why Arthur wasn't showing up for the theater, so I came up to his office. I used the executive car, I always do. And when I let myself into the office, I saw the body of this woman.
You know her?
Well, I knew that she and Arthur had seen each other a few times, but I knew it was all over.
So?
While I was trying to decide what to do, you came in and called the police. I hit you over the head, carried the body to the elevator, and pushed it up through the escape hatch. Then I left her and... well, I pretended to come back when everyone was together.
That the whole truth and nothing but?
The whole truth and nothing but. It was crazy, I guess. Well, I know that Arthur isn't a bad man. She was trying to blackmail him and...
All right, lady. We better just leave this body here and call the cops.
Poor Arthur. He's always been so gentle, he...
Look, you go into the office and phone the police. I'll go down and break the news to your husband. I get downstairs and elbow my way into the bar where Sammy and Crispy are waiting.
Well, it's about time you got back. Did you get the stains out?
I didn't get the stains out, but I found out where I got them.
Yeah, where?
They came from the body of Ethel Harkins.
What?
I found it on top of the roof of the executive car where Helen Crispy put it.
Wow.
Are you serious?
That's right, Arthur.
But why in the world should Helen have...
She didn't want a murder rap pinned on you. I guess she loves you. Go figure out a dame. Minutes later, Sergeant Finger comes down to the bar to make the pinch. The three of us are sitting around the table like we was awake when Sergeant Finger ankles in.
Okay, fellas, the party's over.
You been upstairs?
I've been. Lieutenant's up there now with a woman.
You saw the body?
I saw the body.
I'll sign a full confession.
Before we get to that, just how did you two characters get involved with this whole thing?
Funniest thing you ever heard of, Sarge. We're having a few drinks. And after you dropped in and Sammy here, Sammy's a statistician, he says... It figures in a building this size, there's got to be a murderer. So we begin looking for suspects, see? Sammy takes one look at this guy here, and bingo, that's the guy, he says. So we walk over, like a gag. And Sammy says, where did you stash the body, pal? He almost goes to pieces and tells us. It's up in my office, he tells us. So far, it's a joke. But then I see this guy's serious. How do you like that for coincidence, huh?
Yeah, it's pretty coincidental. Just pulled it right out of the hat, huh, Sammy?
Yeah, figures, that's all.
You think so?
Well, it was a long shot, I admit, but it worked. First guy we tapped just stabbed his lady friend.
That's amazing, all right. Well, Arthur?
Wait a minute.
Huh?
Say, Arthur, you said before that you choked her to death, right?
Yes, she threatened to tell the president of the company, and I grabbed her throat and choked her. And then I ran out of the office and came down here.
That's very interesting. Because the body we found was stabbed with a paper knife from your desk.
What's going on in that little mind, Fortune?
I'm just trying to figure, Sarge. A corpse don't bleed, right?
Right.
So if Arthur Crispy choked her and somebody stabbed her body, it wouldn't bleed.
What's this got to do with that?
My sleeve is covered with blood. Helen Crispy had it on her sleeve, too. Arthur, you're sure you didn't stab her?
I choked her.
So then how come Sammy knew here she was stabbed?
Well, I just figured it, that's all.
Coincidence, huh?
Yeah, sure. You old Rocco boy, just like when we picked this guy out of the mob.
Just like when you picked him.
Hey. Oh, now you're nuts.
When coincidence gets to be too coincidental, it ain't a coincidence. You follow me, Sammy?
What?
You said pick the least likely suspect. Okay, that's you.
Oh, Rock. You're drunk.
I was drunk. I'm sober now.
Maybe we better do a little checking on you. Maybe we better find out if you had anything to do with the murdered woman, huh?
Well, I... That won't be necessary. I'll tell you.
Okay, talk.
She was my fiancée. She was my fiancée, Rock. We were engaged to be married, I thought.
What?
Keep going.
I found out she was seeing this other guy. She was seeing lots of other men. One of them, a man she'd been blackmailing, came to me. This afternoon, I followed her up to Mr. Crispy's office. I listened outside the door and heard him arguing. I heard a sound like a struggle, and Mr. Crispy come out looking like a ghost.
You went in?
Yeah, she was on the floor. He choked her. When she began to come out of it, I... questioned her about the blackmail. She admitted it. She told me she planned to work the same racket on me.
Nice kid.
So, I don't know, I lost my head. I grabbed a paper knife and I stabbed her. Then I locked the door and I came down to the bar and I started drinking.
That's where I came in.
I figured I'd be safe if I could pin the murder on Mr. Crispy. So,
I just made up the business about the statistics.
You willing to sign a statement?
Yeah. I would be willing. Except that right now I have other plans.
Look out! Grab it!
Stop it!
Is he dead?
He's dead. Must have been crazy to think he'd get away like that.
You know, I think he knew he was going to get a bullet, Sarge.
What makes you think so?
I don't know. Figures, I guess.
NBC has presented Frank Sinatra as that footloose and fancy-free young gentleman, Rocky Fortune. Others in tonight's cast include Paul Frees, Barney Phillips, Jack Nestle, George Perrone, and Ida Reese Marin. Tonight's script was written by George Lefferts. Andrew C. Love directed. Now, to tell you about next week's adventure, here's Frank Sinatra as Rocky Fortune.
Hi. Say, did you ever spread yourself all over one of them 300 grand Long Island pads? You sit down at a mahogany table and let the shiny silver get in your eyes while you shovel Patty DeFoy grass in through your front entrance of your face? Man, that's really living. Also, did you ever find yourself faced with a fancy 38 caliber lead purveyor in that same fancy type pad? Man, that's really dying. I'll see you next week.
Enjoy Fibber, McGee, and Molly tonight on the NBC Radio Network.
There you have it. Rocky Fortune, March 9th, 1954. Let's Find a Murderer, starring Frank Sinatra. Also in that cast, I heard there was who was that now? I'm trying to think. Oh, Barney Phillips, Paul Frees. Yeah, and these were written by George Lefferts, who also used to write all the X-1 and Dimension X radio shows.